Welcome to Flower Friends. I'm your host, Sarah Nayani, and on today's episode, in honor of peak bloom season at Shriners Iris Gardens, the famous iris gardens in Salem, Oregon, I had the pleasure of interviewing Liz Schreiner-Schmidt, who is the president of Shriners Gardens. They are located about 30 miles south of Portland, Oregon, and I just wanted to mention that because for the next few days until through May 31st, Shriners is open with their display garden. And so if you live in driving distance, it's a great thing to go visit so you can see some of the beautiful varieties that they have in person. And if not this year, now is a great time to get a visit on your calendar for next year. They're usually open from in their display gardens from early May through the end of May. So go put it on your calendar now so you don't forget for next year. I got to ask Liz all about how her grandfather started the company and how their family has built it up since. And then I went into all sorts of questions on growing iris, best location, conditions, where in the country or the world, what kind of climate you can grow them in. I asked about dividing, companion plants, and then also asked Liz some of her favorite varieties, some of the company's most popular varieties, and then what Liz herself loves so much about bearded iris. So it was such a great conversation, and I really enjoyed Liz's answers and her approach to everything, so I think you guys are going to love this convo. Before we get into the interview, I have some updates. I just got home from Seattle after a visit to London. It was a very quick trip, but I was able to fit in some really fun flowery activities. And so if you listen into the most recent episode of Flower Friends, it was called Live from London. I debriefed after my first day where I attended the Chelsea Flower Show. And after I recorded that episode, I actually was just kind of chilling out in my hotel room. I think I had walked like 6 or 8 miles or something that day, and I was tired. And so after I did the episode, I was just sitting on my bed and I flicked on the TV, and Monty Don and Joe Swift were actually like on the channel that I turned the TV on to. It was BBC, and they were talking through some of the details from the show gardens from Chelsea Flower Show, and they were talking about the awards, and then they actually interviewed some of the designers and showed like the behind the scenes for the past 3 weeks prior to the show of how those designers built their gardens and talked to them a bit more about like how they planned their design and how long it took. And they talked more about all the crews and the people that it takes to put these show gardens together. So it was really cool to just get that like perspective and background, because it's just hard here in the States to kind of pick some of that up without having them on our TV every day. And so it was cool to get that like real-time feedback on some of the gardens that I had seen and some of their thoughts. Like Monty was talking about how he didn't think one of the designs was very good that had like a kitchen garden, and he was pointing out some of the problems that he saw with the garden. And so it was kind of like, I don't know, in our world, like garden gossip, what is kind of the way that, at least to his eye, that he would set something up and what he thought the judges might be kind of focused on. And at that point, they had already issued a lot of the awards, so it was kind of cool to hear their thoughts and feedback, because I think it was pretty widely received by most of the public and people who attended, and just things that I overheard. And then Monty and Joe Swift seemed to agree that they thought that Sarah Price's garden, the Nurture Landscapes garden, should have won. And so it seemed like that was a pretty popular opinion. But anyway, hearing their review, it just really helped me get a handle on things. And I was actually able that night to sit down with my little show guide and map, and I made a plan for day two. And I just felt so much better going in with that on the second day. The first day I was just like pretty overwhelmed. I had no idea what to expect. It was my first time at Chelsea Flower Show, my first time in London, my first time in England, my first time anywhere in Europe. And so it was just like pretty overwhelming when I got there, and there were so many people on day one. but actually on day two, it was a little bit slower and the sun was out on day two. And I think that actually worked to my advantage. I ended up going in the afternoon and I felt like people were maybe a little bit kind of tired of being in the sun all morning and also just hot. And so they were kind of like escaping to the tent and the little food area. And so I just had a little bit more access to the gardens and there were just fewer people on day two. And so anyway, I got to spend a little bit more time at the show gardens and I thought I'd give you a little bit more detail about some of my favorites. So I mentioned the Sarah Price Nurture Landscape Garden, and that one was so beautiful because it was kind of like a desert aesthetic, and it was really like some of the gardens were super planted up. Everywhere you looked, there was not any empty ground. And I kind of like the negative space at Sarah Price's garden. It was just like tan, kind of sand pebble, and she had this beautiful dining table and sort of this, yeah, desert colored backdrop, I guess, on the walls around the garden. And then she had plants growing up them, and the big common theme was the bearded iris. So if any of you are following anything about Chelsea Flower Show, you probably saw photos from her garden. And a lot of the gardens had bearded iris, but I really liked the way that she used them. And I just thought it was kind of cool with the Shriner's Iris interview that one of my favorite gardens at the Chelsea Flower Show really focused on iris, bearded iris, and bringing in different cool color palettes like purples, pinks, tans into the aesthetic around the garden. But just, I don't know, the way that Sarah Price pulled the colors together, it was just so beautiful. So I absolutely loved that one. Another one that I really loved was called Memoria and Green Acres Transcendence Garden, and it was designed by Gavin McWilliam and Andrew Wilson. Those are two very British-sounding names. And basically, they had this, it's called a cantilevered pavilion. So there was like this long center aisle, and it was sort of in white stone. And then you look down to the end, and there's this wall with like a cantilevered roof over it. And it had a skylight in it, and it just had water flowing behind it and below it. So it was just really pretty and elegant. Most of the flowers that were there were white. So it was a lot of like white and green. And to me, it worked really well with the stones, and it just had a really clean aesthetic and look. And one thing I noticed about the show, which is something I also notice a lot in floristry, is the use of white with other colors. Like, to my eye, if you're using flowers that have white in them and other colors, and you're using white flowers, it looks great. But a lot of times when I see like a hot pink flower next to a white flower, I don't love the look of that unless the flowers themselves bring in some of that white color themselves. And so for me, I like typically love to see white on its own, especially if it's like a really bright white, with other flowers that same color and maybe with green. But I don't know, just I loved how that Transcendence Garden was just white and green, very crisp, and it just really brought your eye into this like calming, soothing place, whereas a lot of the other gardens that weren't my favorites were combining color palettes that weren't as soothing. And so I would say with these two, like Sarah Price's Nurture Landscape Garden, she had a very clear color aesthetic that was easy for the eye to follow and just very calming and soothing overall. And then in the Transcendence Garden, I liked how they kept it clean whites. So that was pretty cool. Oh, another one I loved was actually inside the pavilion tent. So it was a little bit hard to get good photos of it because the tent itself was not giving me like natural light to photograph it, but it was called the Talitha Arts Garden, designed by Joe and Laura Carey. And I called it like the butterfly garden, if you saw it posted on any of my Instagram accounts. But basically they had these like, I don't know if they were ceramic or paper butterflies that were white. And then they just had this really pretty like foliage shrubs, trees in the background, and then just really pretty uses of color. It was very appealing. So I really, really liked that garden. And I liked how they only used the butterflies on the right side of the garden. And it kind of also reminded me with like floristry, how I sometimes like it when flowers are grouped together rather than being like Dalmatian polka dots in an arrangement. If there's like three or five or seven like on one side of the arrangement, maybe some others on the other side as well, but I kind of like groupings. And so for me, it was really fun because I have a garden. I do a lot of like growing for efficiency in part of the garden here, especially like on my driveway and on my sidewalk, where I'm just trying to fit as many plants in as I can that I can cut off of for bouquets and arrangements that I'm going to sell or like give to friends, bring to people's houses when I go over for dinner, things like that. But then in my backyard, I have more of like a garden that's kind of built for me and my family that I can cut off of too, but that is like more aesthetically pleasing that we can hang out in the backyard and not, you know, it's not just like rows, like a farm of flowers. It's more like a border along the back of the fence. And so I guess I really like learning about garden design. And I guess it's not something that I've thought about it from a growing perspective, but less from a design perspective. And it's kind of funny because with floristry, I feel like a lot of the concepts are really similar, but I definitely think more about the design on the floristry side and less on the garden. And I think attending Chelsea just really made it like kind of made me realize like how much garden design can factor into your enjoyment of that space and how a lot of the concepts from floristry in terms of color, texture, style are like really applicable to gardening. And so that was really cool. And then I also just loved a lot of the themes from the Chelsea Flower Show. I loved like how they were talking more about using wildflowers, and I loved how a lot, I think all of the gardens were peat free. And that's something that like the RHS has committed to, and Great Britain in general, I think, is committed to being peat free in the next several years. And so it was cool to see all these leaders in garden design not just back that up with great design, but also with sustainable concepts and ideas. The other garden I just haven't been able to get out of my head is called A Letter from a Million Years Past, and it's by Jihe Huang. And she basically built a mountain at Chelsea Flower Show. She was inspired by Jirasan, or the Jiri Mountains in Korea. And there's a bunch of native plants there that have medicinal value. And many of them are threatened or on the verge of extinction due to habitat loss. And so she basically put together all of these incredible stones and made it look so natural. It really looked like it had been there for, I don't know, 100 years or something. And she built it in the past 3 weeks with her whole team. And so she had this big waterfall flowing down over these rocks. She brought in some of the native and threatened species right into the garden to sort of shed a light on these specific plants. And then she had this tower that was an herb drying tower, and she constructed it with natural materials and basically was imitating some of the ways that you could use these plants for medicinal use. And so it was just incredible to be on these like showgrounds and just basically feel like, oh, I just walked into Korea, like this beautiful mountain setting right there. And so I really hung out by that garden for a really long time. It was kind of right at the end of a little walkway, and so it was open on all three sides. And it had less people down there because I think it was more like kind of ecosystem looking than a garden itself. It didn't look like your backyard, or unless you're very lucky and that's what your backyard looks like, but it looked more just like nature. And I just really loved that. I felt like it was very soothing. And so those were some of the things that were highlights for me. I thought I'd just give more detail because the first day I was just so overwhelmed with everything happening. And the second day I really got to focus more on like the design principles and the themes, the concepts that some of these designers were going for. It was just so inspiring to see and hear about and just spend more time focusing on. So anyway, that's my little version of taking you with me. And if you ever get a chance to attend, I highly recommend it. And just maybe like I didn't get the show guide until I got there at Chelsea on the first day. So I didn't get to really sit down with it and look through it beforehand. If you live in the UK, I believe they'll mail you your show guide before the show. But if you live in the US, you can't get it till you arrive. And so I think for me, attending 2 days in a row, I didn't spend the whole day there either day. I had a lot of other things I wanted to get done in London, but it was just really nice that second day to have that as a backdrop. So anyway, again, a lot of those gardens had iris in them. So let's get right over to the bearded iris convo with Liz. And yeah, again, just want to say how lucky I feel to have her on. I've just bought so many, well, every iris that I own from Shriners, and all of mine are in bloom right now here in Seattle. Just a beautiful time of year. I love this time of year when like the peonies, the iris, roses, there's so much kind of overlapping. There's still some ranunculus. And so it's just a really like bountiful late spring time of year. Foxglove are starting here. So I love that combo. And Liz and I talk a lot about what flowers can work well with iris in the garden. So anyway, hope you enjoy the convo and I'll catch you on the other side. First of all, thank you for joining. Welcome to Flower Friends. Could we start with a little background on Shriners? When did the company start?
Well, it actually, the first list was printed in 1925 by my grandfather. He was a buyer for a department store in St. Paul, Minnesota, and he was actually raising chickens at the time. You know, poultry breeding was kind of a thing way back when. He has this book that I still have about his poultry breeding. And he was on the train and he met this man, John Wister, who was a president of the American Iris Society. And he was talking to them, and this Mr. Wister, you know, he was saying how he imported a lot of iris from England and Europe. So he got some of those iris from him, and then he started hybridizing them. And then his interest just went, you know, he just kept hybridizing so many that he decided, he published his first list in 1925. And then his first catalog, black and white, was published in 1928. He was the driving force behind it. That was in St. Paul, Minnesota. And Minnesota is, you know, it's cold. And it's not just the cold. It's just, they get the winds, and it's not the best place to grow things like plants and things, you know, it's just, especially if you're in the production mode. Mm-hmm. So he basically said, you know, he told his son, his oldest son, my uncle, he said, and my dad and my aunt, he said, you know, this would be a really good business if you guys wanted to get into this, but you'd really need to find a different place. In Minnesota, they have what's called a freeze-thaw effect. A lot of times, because of the wind, too, people plant their iris, and if they don't do good winter protection, they might lose half of them.
Wow. That's so interesting. So then how did they decide on Oregon?
Well, what happened is my uncle wrote to all these different universities, and one was Michigan, well, not too far away from Minnesota. One was Tennessee. One was Texas, of all places, and Oregon. state. And he also knew somebody in Grants Pass, and he sent some iris to him. And his name was Henry Meyer. He sent iris to him and had him grow them to see how they do there. And Oregon was looking very good as far as the growing situation. So then they decided back in 1946, they moved everything, all kit and caboodle. They moved everything to Oregon, to where we are today. And there was an orchard on their grounds land. So they had to, you know, remove a lot of trees. But when they moved everything, they couldn't believe how that first year, the long growing season, right? You know, I mean, that's one thing. And, you know, and in Seattle too, you know, and you guys have a little different climate, but similar, we have a longer growing season than a lot of people.
Definitely. Well, I'm picturing all of these like bearded iris rhizomes coming out from Minnesota to Oregon. Was it by train, by truck? And how many were there? Hundreds, thousands?
I'm not real sure about the number. That's a good question. But it was by train.
Okay.
Oh, that's kind of the way people who could afford to travel, you know, by train. And it's funny. I don't know if you've ever been to our gardens, but we have these Adirondack benches. Well, the Adirondack benches from 1925 actually came, they also put those on the train. They put everything they owned on the train. And still today, we have the same pattern for those Adirondack benches. So it's kind of a fun story there. But yeah, everything. And, you know, my mom always says when she first got here, she wanted to cry because, you know, they pull up to this place where they're going to live. And it's the office, but then it was a house and they all had to move in and live together. And, you know, there's chickens outside running around. And she was from the city, you know, so she wasn't real. She was like, oh no, what did I do?
That's awesome. So once then they got to Oregon, how did the business kind of expand and grow over time?
Well, then they started, like I said, they cleared the land. They had, you know, they bought so much. I think it was only 40 acres that way back when. And then they started clearing the land. It was peach trees, I believe. So they slowly cleared the land and they started growing more iris and producing more. And then they started putting out a catalog and, you know, sending it out to people all over the United States. And it just really started growing. And they also won some awards in the 50s it's the William Dykes Medal Award. And he was based in the UK, England. And it's a very prestigious award for an iris to win. It's the best award for iris. And so that was very good. They started getting awards for their hybridizing, and that's kind of, then it just started growing. At one point we had like 250 acres. That was in the 80s. We've since kind of brought it back down a little bit. And now we're just growing. We're growing smarter as far as, you know, where you have about 150 in iris and probably, 8 to 10 in daylilies, because we have daylilies too. But a lot of that is just because you have to be able to manage it, right? So.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a lot of land.
You know, we also have to, for production, we plant every, we do a three-year rotation on our fields. So to get good production and to give the land a rest and you know, good farm practices for the land. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just amazed. Like, I wonder if when you travel through the country and you see bearded iris, you know, if those originated from your grandfather's stock, if you were shipping all around the world back in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, or I guess all around the country, that must be so incredible to think about how many plants have come from Shriners.
Well, yeah, true. And I think more than that, there are a lot of, so I have to give a shout out. There's a lot of really good hybridizers out here. Shriners is one of the older hybridizers. I mean, we've been doing it for 98 years, but there's a lot of people who raise iris and hybridize them and put out some great iris in commerce that you can purchase. And so it's true. I think maybe ours, maybe we're way back when we're some of the earliest. And it's always fun too, to talk to people who, you know, if you go somewhere and they go, you know, this was my grandma's iris, this is my favorite iris. And it's probably a really old one, but it's so sweet because they can't bear to part with it because their grandma grew it. So that's really sweet. And that's very heartwarming to me to hear those kind of stories.
Yeah. A good friend, Kristen, that lives in Oregon in Newport. So not too far from you guys. She has all of her grandmother's iris and daylily collection, which I believe a lot of it was from Shriners. And so I know she went to visit you guys last year, and I think that was really meaningful. So I love hearing things like that as well.
It's very, yeah, that's, and some of those old varieties are tried and true, and they're very good stock, good growers, lots of vigor. So yeah, they're keepers.
You mentioned a little bit about, you know, you're growing, but you also have display gardens now, right?
Yeah, we've had a display garden. Actually, we've had a display garden since probably the mid 50s when we had our first convention. We had a display garden, but we have a display garden every year. It's in May. It's usually the first week or May until about May 31st. And we open it up to the public. It's there's a small fee to get in, but it's very nominal, and it's a 10-acre display, and they can walk all around. And we're open from like 7 to 6 every day, and it's beautiful because it's not only iris. You know, my brother Ray planted it. It's a lot of companion plants, so you'll see iris, you'll see pansies, you'll see lupin, you'll see foxglove, you'll see magnolia trees, you'll see lots of different species of plants. And it helps you as a gardener to say, wow, I can do that in my garden.
Yeah, or at least try to make it look as cool as your guys.
At least try, that's right.
I love the contrast of the lupins with the bearded iris in your display gardens. I haven't visited yet, but I'm very, you know, very much following all of the accounts and the catalog and everything. And I just love that contrast of the colors of some of those lupins against the bearded iris.
Yeah, I know the lupins are so beautiful too. Yeah, well, you'll have to come down this year and we'll give you a little tour.
Perfect. I was thinking that this is my year to get there, so I would love to. And so when is that best time for people to visit?
I would say, like I said, we open early May, and we have, so just to let you know about iris, we have dwarf bearded iris, intermediate bearded iris, and tall bearded iris. So if you want to see the dwarf bearded iris, I'd say come right away in May.
Okay.
Because that's when they're blooming. But if you want to see the iris, the best time to come in their full bloom, if you want to see kind of like peak bloom, anywhere between the 18th through the 25th of May is always a good time to see a lot of color. It's pretty anytime, but that's a really good time. And you know, being gardeners, you have to be you have to know about the weather too. You know, I mean, the weather can play a part, of course, in this. Just make sure you watch your weather, and you can certainly call our office and say, hey, how's the bloom, or how's it, you know, is your flowers blooming early this year? Hopefully it'll be a normal year, but what's normal anymore, right?
So if it's a warm year, they might bloom earlier. And then if it's a colder,
right,
like winter and spring, they might be after May 20th is kind of the...
Right. Last year, really cold and wet. And so we still closed May 31st, but I'd say it was just And even last year, it's sad, but some of the flowers didn't even open very well because of just, it was so wet and cold, you know, that's part of gardening. You can't change any of that. It's just what happens in your garden.
Well, so you mentioned the main categories of bearded iris. There's other iris that you sell as well, right?
Yes, we sell Japanese iris, just not only really only one type of Japanese iris. It's a variegated leaf. It's beautiful. And then we have Siberian iris too. And we're kind of building up our stock on that and getting some newer varieties. So we don't have a lot of those available, but in the next 5 years, I think we're going to have a lot for, you know, newer varieties and that. But and then we also sell, like I told you, daylilies. We have Bill Marriott is the hybridizer for our daylilies, and he introduces new ones every year, and he sends them to us, and then we grow them in our fields, propagate them, and sell them the following year. And he sells some amazing, beautiful daylilies. I mean, colors that you've never seen before, just gorgeous, different than your usual, you know, yellow daylily. And then what else? And then we sell amaryllis in the wintertime, but we've kind of branched out a little bit just because we have our crew around, and we're like, okay, what can we do to keep you guys?
Yeah, year-round business. That's great. And then would you say, are bearded iris your most popular offering?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We say they're the queen of the flower kingdom. Bearded iris are the queen, you know, that's what I call them. So they are definitely the most popular, I think, in people's mind.
Absolutely. And it's almost like they're wearing a crown too. They're like, we crown ourselves, we're the queen.
Bearded iris are so nice because you can pet them. Put them in an arrangement. You can put them in your house. You can gather them all together and put a big bouquet on your deck. And so they are versatile that way. You know, they're a little delicate, but they're also, I mean, I don't know. I don't treat mine very delicate, and I'm amazed what they go through, and they still look beautiful.
Definitely. I actually first came across your irises through a floral class I took with Nika Mill, and she had ordered, like, I think it was for anyone who lived around the country, and you guys shipped the iris to like my home. And then I watched an online video with her of how to arrange them. And I just like, couldn't believe like they can handle some transport, you know, they're pretty sturdy.
Yeah. Yeah. They really are. They aren't as delicate as you think they are. I mean, you have to care, but yeah, they really are very sturdy, and they're beautiful in an arrangement too.
Yeah, they really do. They just add like I don't know, just this delicate, like romantic flair. So, well, let's get into growing irises a little bit, if that works for you. What climate do irises grow best in? We talked about maybe not the super cold, but is Oregon like the ideal climate?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, iris can grow all over the U.S. So like for instance, like, okay, so Minnesota and the northern states, we recommend if you're going to grow them in Minnesota and North Dakota, South Dakota, get your order in early, because we start shipping in July, order in July, plant them in July, and get them established before your winter sets in, and then they'll probably be fine, and then give them winter protection. Here in Oregon and Washington, we can fudge a little bit. You can put those iris in, you know, October, November, and they're still going to do good. I mean, it's usually in our climate, we want to put them in before then because of the rains and it's cold and you don't want to be out, you know, digging in the dirt sometimes. I would say the best climate for iris is, you know, it's really important to have full sun, good drainage. A lot of times people tell me, oh, my iris, they didn't bloom well. Well, usually if the lack of bloom in an iris is lack of fertility in the soil, or they don't have enough sunlight, they need at least 6 hours of sunlight. They sometimes, some real hardy ones will kind of grow in the shade, but then they'll lean and you want that either, because then if they lean, then they fall down because they're so heavy. So that's, it's just important to do that. And I think another thing, climate-wise, I mean, this is regarding the soil and, well, climate-wise, you can grow them anywhere except for, I should say, like Florida, south of Florida. They can't grow there. They grow there, but they don't flower. Let's just say that, because they don't have a long enough dormancy period to produce a flower. They don't have a long enough cold period in order to create the bloom bud so that they can flower. So sometimes places like South Florida and South Texas, sometimes those states have difficulty with them. And I actually know a few people in Texas who buy iris every year and plant them like annuals, but they usually don't bloom the next year. So yeah, they have a love affair with them, right? So
they need them where they live. Yeah.
Yes, they need them. That's right. That's right. If your iris aren't blooming, like I just talked, for instance, you know, you say, gosh, I'm not getting any blooms. Probably they might have been they're probably sitting there too long. Like, how long have you had them? Were they, you know, in the ground too long, as far as, was it 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years? Sometimes you'll see a mound of iris and you can tell they haven't been divided in a while. So you need to dig those up and divide them and keep the big ones. But when you do that, whenever you divide iris or any plant in your garden, I think it's really important to amend your soil, add amendments to even if it's top dressing, because those all flowers, plants, trees need nutrients. And if you amend your soil, it doesn't take much to do. If you do it every year, a little bit of top dressing, it will really, really help your flowers and your plants.
If someone orders from Shriners and they're going to get, let's just say, like 3 or 4 bearded iris, how do those come packed? And then what's like the first thing that people should do, or how should they plant them and get them in the ground?
So the first thing they do, they're packed. We pack them in this, it's called Excelsior. So it's like wooden shavings. And so we pack them in that to keep them dry. Iris, unlike a lot of plants, they like to have their roots dry. And it's funny because dahlias are kind of the opposite. They like to have their roots wet. So, but iris like dry roots. So we pack them in this Excelsior and we ship you the box. And on the outside, it says perishable plants, you know, please open immediately. And we recommend that within a couple of days, you should plant them in the place that you want to put them in your garden. We have a little booklet that comes with them, how to grow and steps on how to plant them. And, you know, some people, if you can't plant them right away, we recommend storing them in a cool, dry place and opening the box and airing the roots out. It's okay if they get dry, those roots, because they don't mind that. They like to be dry. Some people think, oh, I gotta put those roots in water. Well, the iris don't want that. They want to be dry until you put them in the soil. Then you should water them once a week until they get established. So it's and make sure full sun for sure on that too. But they're very easy to grow. I mean, once you plant them in the soil, a lot of times within a week or two, you'll see their leaves, because we trim them back, you'll see the leaves kind of sprout through.
Could you plant them into a pot if you wanted to? Are there some that do well in pots?
Any of them do well in pots. The key to a pot is the width of the pot, especially if you want to use it in there, if you want to keep them in there all year. If temporarily, any size pot is fine. Like if you want to temporarily do it until you're going to put it into your garden. But if you want to do it, a lot of times people plant them in a larger pot. Ooh, it's got to be at least probably 18 to 24 inches width and probably at least 2 feet deep, 2 feet in depth. And yeah, they'll do well in pots. The thing with pots is don't overwater them. that's the key thing. And of course, full sun, but pots are very easy to put in full sun.
Yeah, that's great. I think it might be a nice, you know, there's not a lot of plants that can just live in a pot. So I think that's a great idea for someone who might not have like a full garden to get some bearded iris in their life.
Oh yeah. And it's great. Yeah. Cause you can order a few and then just put them in pots on your deck. Or if you have, you know, live in a condo or something, a patio. It's funny. I have a funny story about that. Cause there was an iris that was my dog. So I have two golden retrievers. When they were little, they loved the tags on the iris that we have, you know, our iris tags, and because they'd in the wind. So they would grab them and they'd run around the yard with them, you know, after I'd planted them. And finally, one of them, they did this in like, oh, I think it was November, December. And I was just frustrated. So I just left it there. I thought, I'm not planting that. It's just going to stay there. So the poor thing, this poor iris bulb was just out in the weather for a couple, 2-3 months. And then in January, I put it in a pot on the deck. And no kidding, Sarah, it bloomed in May and it was gorgeous. For 3 blooms, I was like, I can't believe this. I can't believe it, because I treated it so horribly.
And it thrived.
So they are pretty tough, even if your golden retrievers like to play with them.
It's the dog treatment. I love it. And then for most of the irises, like, so you'll get it in the summer or fall, plant it, get it some good, you know, roots growing, some leaves growing. And then what do you do over the winter? Do you cut the leaves back?
Yeah, it's good to, you know, it's really good in the fall to clean up your garden, mainly because of slugs and pests and diseases. And, you know, if you have kind of a messy garden, it just breeds more, usually snails, slugs, and those kind of things. And they like iris leaves. They really do. They'll feast on them. So it's really good to cut back the leaves, clean up around the iris. If you live in a place like that's cold, like maybe Bend or somewhere like that, I would probably do winter protection maybe in like November, you know, add some either pine boughs or leaves to protect them so they don't freeze out. And then you have to be real careful in the spring to watch and make sure that they don't overheat. And if the minute you see kind of a sign of fresh growth, then you can remove those pine boughs or leaves. So, because sometimes you might smother them a little bit, but they're real easy. I mean, but I think trimming them up in the fall is a really good idea. And then I think another great idea for winter too is to do a little slug bait. If you have some, if you have dogs like I do, you know, there's Deadline, or there's the Sluggo. Sluggo works really well for dogs, because they don't touch it. So there's something like, I think Deadline's not dog friendly, but anyway, that either one of those, that the Sluggo for dogs. And, but I think it's really important to do that and just watch them.
So then basically what will happen is in the spring, like you said, new leaves will start to emerge and grow up. And then do most of them bloom in the first year, or what would you say is kind of like the ratio of what to expect, I guess?
I would say 90% of them bloom with, you know, all things being like good soil, full sunlight. We would say 90% of them bloom. Another thing we recommend is when your tulips are blooming, if like when you see tulips blooming, to go out and just give your iris a light fertilizer. That always helps, give them a little boost. And then also, you know, when they're growing in the spring, just trim any dead or diseased leaves. Sometimes you might see that, but yeah, they should really, we always say usually 90% of them will bloom. We get a lot of customers who are like, oh, you know, they've never gardened before and they get so excited. They bloom. And it's like, that's what they're supposed to do.
Well, that was actually one of the listener questions about cutting back. Lauren wrote in to say that her iris grew so much after cutting it back last fall that she was wondering if it was appropriate to cut them back again in the spring before they bloom, or if that would hurt the plant.
I probably wouldn't cut them back in the spring.
Okay.
I would just cut away the dead or diseased leaf, but I wouldn't really cut them back in the spring. No, I think she's got a point there. That leaf is growing in the fall. It's okay, because they go dormant in the fall. But so we cut the leaf before it goes dormant, and then it kind of dies back a little bit. But in the spring, I think I'd leave it alone. But do cut the diseased or dead leaves. That's perfectly fine to do.
Okay, great. And then could you tell us, you mentioned dividing bearded iris before, but like about how many years do you recommend, or are there telltale signs when you look in iris that you're like, oh, that one's ready to be divided?
I would say it's a good rule of thumb is like 4 to 5 years. You probably need to take a look at them. And what they start doing is they kind of start mounding up and kind of growing in a circle a little bit. And the rhizomes push themselves up out of the ground. And they get quite small, and the flowers after a while start, they aren't as big because all the energy is going into the rhizome, right? And because they're just so massive, so it's always good, and there's just not enough nutrients in there either, so it's always good after about 4 or 5 years to dig them up, cut them apart. And we have all this on our website if they want to take a look. Cut them apart and, you know, throw away the small ones, keep the larger ones, and then replant back after you've amended the soil. And that will make them so they bloom really nicely the next year.
And you want to give each of the ones you divided space to breathe, right? Not just like plant them next. Okay.
Correct. You want to give them about 12 to 18 inches apart to, so that they can, you know, grow out to their full potential. Right.
Sounds like we're going to have a lot for our flower friends to share, you know?
It's true. I always say, if you have like 10 iris in, you know, so many years, maybe 10 years, you can be an iris grower.
Right. Yeah. Then you have 100. Well, and so you had mentioned on your website, you guys have a lot of information that's super helpful, but I believe you have some videos on dividing and planting and all those things. Is that correct?
We do. We have lots of videos and lots of how-tos, tips. And we also have, you know, our office, they're very trained. Like, we get people who sometimes they still call up and ask questions, like cultural questions, and they're very knowledgeable in helping people with their problems as far as if their iris aren't blooming or something, they need help. So, and they can send them some resources too.
Okay, that's great to know. Good to know there's actually like customer service offered still these days. So,
and that, let me tell you, that's something that we're very strong on.
Yes. So we got a listener question from Gina from Roses and Raspberry Leaves, and she asked which companion plants you recommend. I know you mentioned some before, but if someone's just getting bearded iris for the first year this year, and they're wanting something to plant with it, what are some of the things you'd recommend?
What we do in our garden is we plant, you know, lupins, alliums. We also plant the delphiniums because they bloom in June. We plant pansies, and we plant Icelandic poppies for the front of the border. It just seems like there's so much you can do as long as they all like the same general habit. I think the cottage garden, if you give it enough space, we have one bed where we have a certain roses in one bed and then the iris in front. So there's a lot of things you can do as far as your garden, and lots of companion plants. And I would just try, you know, you can always come down and take a look at our garden or and also just talk to your nursery owner. There's a lot of good resources that way, but we have had really good luck with those. And we love all the different flowers with it. It's, you know, beautiful that way. What's another one? Oh, Arimarius, but we've kind of planted that more separately because it's so big.
Well, that was another thing. Is there anything we should avoid planting with iris? And it sounds maybe you don't want to plant something that's going to block out the sun.
Right. That, yeah, no, you don't. Basically you want everything that's sun loving, but not too big so that it fights with it. And the thing that's really important is space, you know, companion plants like lilies, allium, lupin and pansies. They don't fight for too much space. You can tuck them in anywhere. The other thing we do is we actually plant sometimes thyme in the front of the border. That looks really nice. So you can, the ideas are endless, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like there's, well, first of all, just really good color combos. And then also I find they add like just such a different texture and look. It's almost like this plume or pop of color amidst the rest. Yeah. So kind of endless possibilities, I think.
That's right.
Do we want to avoid planting next to things that need a ton of water, like when iris aren't in bloom? You know, for instance, like I'm just thinking about dahlias that I water a lot in the summer. Would that be a bad thing to plant nearby?
There is probably some truth to that. We don't have too many dahlias out there, although they're gorgeous. We have some in beds, but you know, I guess if you were just watering the dahlias and not the iris, it'd be fine. But we water our garden our display garden that we have out here in May. We water it all summer long because all the fox, we want the delphiniums to bloom, and then we want this to bloom. We have the roses, and the watering's okay and the iris don't mind the water. It's just, they want to make sure if you water them once a week or twice a week that you have good drainage.
Okay. So they're not like sitting in a puddle basically, then they'll be fine.
That's right. That's right.
Great. Well, I mean, there is just such a love affair with bearded iris. I think like maybe there always has been, but at least for my generation of flower growers, it seems to be, you know, really like the flower right now. And so I was wondering, first of all, if you could just describe, I mean, you have generations of this in your family, but what it is that really like captures your heart about bearded iris?
Oh, I think what captures my heart is the luminous quality of them, the blooms. When you see, I don't know of a flower that has that sheen. They really have they're almost mesmerizing to look at sometimes. I think certain varieties really are that pastels, they're so beautiful. And they are, because I think they are limited in their bloom habit, although we now have reblooming iris that bloom again in like August, early August and mid August. But I think that's the thing that I love is, and the fragrance too. And, you know, they have a very distinct fragrance, and some of them we tag as very fragrant and some not so much, but when you're walking through the garden, it's a very wonderful fragrance. But I would say I love, it's very, it goes too fast. The season goes too fast. Garden every day, about four times a day, and it just goes too fast. It's like you never see enough. But
I was just talking about how, to me, that makes certain flowers so special because they only have that season. And like when you look at a bearded iris, you kind of know about, I mean, there are those reblooming ones, but for the most part, if you see an arrangement with bearded iris, it really like sets it in a time and place, and it's almost more special. It's so sad. I want the season to go on forever, but it almost makes them more special to me of that time frame when they're blooming.
It does. It does. And I think that's what gardeners love in their home garden. You know, all of a sudden, you know, they'll go out and they'll see one emerging in bud. And then they'll go out the next day and they're like, oh, you know, it might have opened. And it's just, it's something that is so very special, and it kind of draws people in they love sharing their photos, and I love seeing them too, because they're beautiful. And it's just, it's funny that how this one writer, he was a New York Times writer. His name was Henry Mitchell. He said, iris season is just way too short. He's right.
He is. That seems like it should be the tagline of bearded iris, or just all iris.
Your iris start to bloom, you need to just take a chair and sit there and watch and just, you know, sit and just enjoy it. And I thought, that's so true, because it is so fun to sit out in your garden and enjoy all your flowers. But there is something mesmerizing about the spring flowers, the May flowers.
Absolutely. Well, what are some of your personal favorites, or even just color palettes that you love? But if you have varieties, I'm sure listeners would love to know.
That's very hard, because I always say my favorite is the one I'm looking at, because it's true. But pastels are always my favorite. I love the pastel colors. Right now, one of my favorites right now is this one called Tango Amigo. I love the variation of color in it, the striations of the falls kind of has this veining, and it's just a really beautiful color. Another one is Silverado. That's a gorgeous kind of a whitewash blue, more whitewash than anything, but it's, the form is impeccable. Another favorite is Petticoat Shuffle. It's a white, but it has stitching around it. And when it opens up, it's just pristine looking. I love that one. But, and then there's one, let's see, there's some darks. Midnight Treat I love. That's a dark purple, really dark purple. And then we have some real black iris. Awakening Embers, because Awakening Embers is very black, but it has a beard that is, it's a yellow, a golden yellow beard that just sets it off. And it's a really great name, Awakening Embers. But that's just a few, Sarah. I could tell you 20 more names, but we don't have.
Well, as you were just mentioning those, I was Googling all of them, and that Awakening Embers is so beautiful with the orange and the yellow, just that stripe on the beard. Wow.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And I just love, like, they just make such unique patterns. Like, I'm looking in right in kind of the center of the flower, and it's almost like not tiger print, but there's just this like really cool white and purple texture. You know, obviously I'm obsessed with flowers, but I just am amazed at how these colors kind of happen in nature and then are bred by people to just bring out these beautiful, beautiful varieties.
I know. It's kind of funny, because my dad, who, you know, he was the hybridizer back in his, he was the main hybridizer. And now my brother and my nephew, Ben, are my brother Ray and my nephew Ben. But my dad, I remember in the old days, if you look at an iris and it has that veining up by the beard, they call that sometimes, I'm trying to find one here, but they have this veining by the beard, and that was called haft marks, H-A-F-T marks. And my dad, they always wanted to get rid of those. he didn't want those in his iris. Well, it's funny, because for a long time they took them out, but now the hybridizers are kind of putting those veinings back in, and they're beautiful. So it's funny how it changes. You know, if you look at the patterns of the flowers, the breeders, how they have they go to one thing and then they kind of start delving into another. But the breeding for all flowers has just taken off. I mean, iris are one of them, but there's so many variations and stripings and striations, which makes it so fun. But it also, for the customer, makes it so hard to choose.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you mentioned that as kind of like a different trend. Are there other trends that you've noticed with breeding in terms of colors or size or anything like that?
Well, that's just one thing I've noticed. I should, the other thing we always breed for is vigor. One thing we really want to breed for in our flowers is to make sure it has like 7 to 9 buds. Some varieties, they just don't have a lot of bud count, and we want something that's very floriferous. So you'll notice a lot of our introductions have a lot of flowers because that's what we want. You know, we want something that's going to bloom and bloom and bloom. That's one thing that we're really sticklers on. And I'm trying to think of what else. Well, the other thing is ruffles. Ruffles are really important. Mm-hmm. For that, you know, and the right ruffling. So yeah, that, and then the veining, and sometimes some, it's really nice to see inside the iris where the it's called a stigmatic lip. You can see it's where the pollen is. Sometimes that lip is a different color, and that's very, it's just, they're just doing so many different things these days as far as color blending and variations.
Just so beautiful. Well, in terms of breeding, how long does it take to grow out a new iris variety?
About 8 to 10 years. Wow. So I know that's a long time. About 8 to 10 years, because you do the cross, like we'll cross, and you know, if you come down, I'll show you all this, I promise. So you do the cross pollinate, and we probably do, if you can believe it, like 10,000 a year. It's crazy how many we do. And then what they do is they write all that down. Everything is in a record book, and then they plant out the seed. Then the seed it forms a seed pod. And then with the seed pod, they take it and plant it in a protected area. They kind of cover it with plastic so it doesn't freeze. And then they plant it out when it's a 2-year plant. They plant it out in the field, and then they watch it bloom, because that's usually 2 years from this cross is when we get the first bloom. And that's when they start saying, okay, this one's a keeper. This one's a throw out. This one's a keeper. So you might have a seed pod that has 50 seeds, right? And maybe one or two of them are keepers. The rest of the plants you're throwing out because they don't have what you want. They're just mm-hmm. not, they might be the same, but that's what's, it's just like children. You can have, you know, 10 seeds, but they're each uniquely, individually different, even in their coloring, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's so wild that like a seed from the same pod that had the same pollination event, you know, that it's going to end up really different than the other 49 in that pod.
It's amazing to see. Yeah, it's beautiful. So then they monitor it, and then they also look at how it's growing, its growth pattern. So if it multiplies quickly, then that is what they, you know, that's something that they're very interested in, and they're very you know, that's something they'll go, okay, this is really good. It multiplies. It's got really good coloration, and we like its vigor, and that the way it sits as far as its structure. Then they'll say, okay, this is a keeper. And then they'll see how much they have. And usually we don't introduce something unless we have like 200 plants of it, just because we don't want to run out. You hate to put it out there and say, oh, sorry, you can't have this. We want you to, but we don't have enough.
Good. So you wait until you have a certain quantity, and then you'll release it.
Then we release it. Sometimes we release flowers, some though, and we'll have a certain quantity, because we also grow some other people's iris too, and sometimes for some reason, and our iris too, sometimes there'll be some sort of swale in the field, like a low spot, and the flowers don't grow as well and they don't look as good. And so we're like, you know what? My nephew will say, you know what? We're not sending this one out. It's sold out. So we'll sell it out. You can't get it this year because we don't like the way the growing conditions of it, because we really stand by our quality and make sure you're going to get one that's in good shape and it's going to grow well for you.
Well, how many new, just like in an average year, how many new varieties do you guys usually release?
About 18.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is a lot. Yeah, about 18. Yeah, we could do a lot more, but 18's kind of, you know, that's enough. They just have so many crosses. I mean, we could, it's just, yeah, I always tell them they need to cut it back a little bit, but it's kind of like a kid in a candy store. You know, my brother will go out there and he's out there from morning till night because it's so beautiful, and he'll walk through, you know, and just see different things. And it's so beautiful. He loves it out there.
Well, do you guys have like some standard best-selling varieties that just year after year are your favorite, or maybe not your favorite, but just like the popular choice that people always want to buy?
Yeah, I would say we do have some of those. Some of them are those award medal winners that I was mentioning, the William Dykes award medal winner, like Dusky Challenger is one that iris. It's a purple. It's a beautiful, beautiful big iris. And that iris has won, it's been in the top 10 of the most popular 100 iris in the nation. So it's always top 10. So yeah, and we have several other ones that are in that top as far as growers. Immortality is another one. It's a pure white, but it also reblooms, hence the name Immortality.
Wow.
There's quite a few, and you know, you can kind of see that. It will say in the description if it's an award winner or a medal winner. But yeah, we really want to say though that even the award medal winners are fabulous. There's some of them are the older ones, but I think there's so many people hybridizing iris that are very, very good. And the award medal winners, it's hard to see everyone. So it's hard to, have them be selected. I think I feel like the iris world has just gone crazy and there's so many good ones out there.
Yeah, I just love the ones that are kind of like glowy and orange. Like you mentioned, the ones that it just looks like it's glowing. And so I love some of those like really unique, cool, kind of like almost coffee to orange to like purple coloring in there. And so those are the ones that I've really gone for and kind of filled up my garden with. But then I got some fun ones like Anaconda, which is like purple. And then it looks like someone splattered like white paint on the petals. And it's just got this really cool beard that's orange. And so anyway, I mean, I'm just fascinated. I actually take your guys like glossy catalog, and it's kind of my like coffee table book on there. I just love looking through at all the varieties that you have. And I need to triple my land so I can grow them all.
No, I do the same thing with dahlias. I go through the dahlia catalog and mark them with a Sharpie. Which ones do I want this year? Don't need anymore, but I sure like them.
They're the best. Yes, totally. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to share while we have you?
Oh gosh, I just want to say for your listeners, if you've never been down to our garden, you should really try to make a day or a date to come down and see it, because it is very inspiring and it will be, it's beautiful. We have one garden that's just, it has iris, 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 and they're fabulous to look at. And you can take a look at them in person and say, yeah, this is the one I want. Instead of, it's fun to look online too, but if you can see them in person, It just gives you that luminous quality that sometimes you can't see on the website, right? And then you can take a bouquet home. They're beautiful, and we have a lot of them in bud form, so they're easy to transport too. But that's the one thing I would say is try to come down. It's really beautiful.
Well, thank you so much, Liz, for joining. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and I can't wait to come down and visit.
Yeah, Sarah, let me know. Thank you so much. I loved chatting with you, and thank you so much once again, and I hope to see you this year.
With so much going on this May, I didn't get a chance to get down to Shriners, but I did already put it on my calendar for next year and can't wait to go. I think I just had too much travel this month, and so I can't wait to get there next year. But if you're in the area, again, they're open through May 31st at their show garden, or you can put it on your calendar for next year. And if you don't live anywhere nearby, you can also follow along on their Instagram. It's at Shriners Gardens, and Shriners is spelled S-C-H-R-E-I-N-E-R with an S at the end, and then Gardens. So go look them up. You can see their beautiful flowers they have in bloom right now on their Instagram. And I will also post them on the Flower Friends Podcast Instagram. It's at Flower Friends Podcast. So if you're not already, follow along there. And I will link to that in the show notes, both of those accounts. All right. I hope everyone has a great afternoon, evening, weekend, Memorial Day weekend, and I will be back soon with another great episode. Thanks so much, Flower Friends. Bye.